At precisely 6 a.m., the alarm clock rudely buzzes. Lori groans involuntarily as she fumbles for the switch to turn it off, then rolls on her back and forces her still groggy mind to contemplate the day. Rain is pelting the window. Its gentle sound sparks a fast, flurious flow of thoughts. The last time it rained, there was traffic tie-ups all over the interstates. I won't make it to work on time. Last week, Madeline gave me the most hateful look for arriving late. Just my luck to have a boss who doesn't like me. If there ever was a layoff, my name would be at the top of the list. And then how would I pay my mortgage? What would I tell the children? It's now 6:03. Lori is off to a great start with her worry habit. She began a brand new day by successfully leaping from arriving to work a few minutes late to being downsized and applying for food stamps. After that strenuous mental workout, complete with fear, anxiety, and self-doubt, worry is familiar. It's a familiar demon to most of us. It has been referred to as today's number one mental health disorder. Yet amazingly, we seem to know little about worry. Perhaps with higher awareness, we'd make better choices on how to approach this destructive habit positively. Worry can be physically harmful. According to Dr. Charles Mayo, who helped find the Mayo Clinic, worry or anxiety affects the circulation, heart, glands, the whole nervous system, and profoundly affects the health. I have never known anyone who died of overwork, but I know many who died of worry. You can worry yourself to death, but you'll never worry yourself into a long life. It takes precious energy to maintain a high anxiety level. This effort makes a chronic worrier significantly more vulnerable to physical and emotional consequences. Human beings were designed to have a fight or flight reaction to potentially harmful situations. Our ancestors often found themselves in highly stressful predicaments, such as the prospect of wild animals attacking them. In their case, worry often saved lives. The difference is in their stress forced them to make quick decisions. Worry can also get to be a habit. We can easily get into the habit of hosting negative thoughts that allow our minds to wander without discipline or constructive direction. That's what Lori permits herself to do every morning. Keeping worry under control is an uphill battle for some more than others. For example, the worry habit is often more difficult to break for perfectionists with high expectations of themselves and others. Since worry indicates a feeling of powerlessness, worriers often have issues with control and rigidity that make it difficult to accept change. Type A individuals, those who are high achievers, are particularly susceptible to worry. So are people who witness the worry habit in action with their partners. Now, she goes on to hear in this article, which I think is done for military people, to try to help them channel that effort, all that energy of worry, into something more positive. But I thought today, with the current world conditions the way they are, with economic layoff and certainly challenges a possibility for many people, it might be good to at least address the subject from a scriptural standpoint. There are many examples of people in our society who, not knowing the hope of God's kingdom, get involved in worry. In fact, they worry about a lot of things. I got a few quotes here on worry. This is just from a book on quotes. Worry has been defined as a small trickle of fear that meanders through the mind until it cuts a channel into which all other thoughts are drained. Another one, somebody has said that ulcers are not caused by what you eat, but what is eating you. It says, worriers spend a lot of time shoveling smoke. It also says, worry is like a rocking chair. It will give you something to do, but won't get you anywhere. And there's the truth in that. A child does not worry all day long whether his house will be there when he gets home from school or whether his parents will get him a meal for that evening. Children do not worry about such things because they trust their parents. In the same way, we as Christians should trust our Heavenly Father to supply what is best for us. Mickey Rivers, at the time an outfielder for the Texas Rangers, stated his philosophy of life. Ain't no sense worrying about things you got no control over, because if you get control over them, there's no sense worrying. And there's no sense worrying about things you got no control over either, because if you got no control over them, there's no sense worrying. So probably some wisdom in that, although not reflective of higher education. This is called the daily grind of worry. Says, this sermon is dedicated to all of you who have worried in the past, all of you who are now worried, and all of you who plan to worry sometime in the future. That might sound amusing, but it's no laughing matter. Quite frankly, worry can be a sin. It is, however, one of those acceptable sins in the Christian life. We would never smile at a Christian who staggered into his home night after night drunk or abusive but we often smile at a Christian friend who worries. We would not joke about a brother or sister in God's family who stole someone's car, but we regularly joke about our worrying over some detail in life. But worry, though, is serious business. It can drain our lives of joy day after day. There's not one of us who doesn't wrestle with the daily grind of it. It says we're going to look at some of these answers here, or some of these things that are given to us in the Scriptures, and certainly the Psalms and the writings of Solomon in the Proverbs tell us a great deal about how we should approach this. I want to begin today over in Luke chapter 4 and verse 18. Luke chapter 4 and verse 18. Now, during this past 6 months, we have seen people lose massive amounts of money. We have seen our 401ks, if we had a retirement program based on the 401k investments, which many, many working Americans do, we've seen those go down in value by as much as 45 to 50%. The average American had most of their equity, most of their value in their life, physically speaking, in their houses, many of which have lost all of that. There are approximately one-third of all houses now in states like Nevada and Florida. The mortgage is higher than the actual value, the selling value of a willing buyer of the house. And that remains to be seen around here because, you know, we haven't been hit quite as hard, although from what I've seen in the news here locally, the last month, November, that they have sales records for. It looks like the plunge in property values is also hit here. But given all of those things, Jesus Christ said in verse 18 of Luke chapter 4, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted and to proclaim liberty to the captives." The human experience ever since Adam and Eve has not been one of great freedom and prosperity and freedom from challenge or worry. We have been essentially spoiled Americans since about the year 1800. We have lived in the choicest peace of the earth. We have had precious few enemies to attack our shore. We have had bountiful harvests. We have had blessings of the heaven above and the earth beneath, as God promised the descendants of Joseph. Most of history has not seen that. Most people down through history have suffered as either slaves or as peasants. Their potential to actually get ahead in life was almost zero because they lived in a society where there was no hope. A ruling elite, whether it was the land barons of the Middle Ages or the ancient kings of the ancient kingdoms, owned all the land, and all they could hope for was simply to be a peasant working on somebody else's land. If you think about the people who braved 5 to 7 weeks of horrible storms and terrible seasickness, and many of them starving and dying to leave Europe and to come here in the 1600s and 1700s, you wonder, why did they do that? What was so bad about Europe? I've got an interesting letter at home. I didn't bring it with me, but I've got an interesting letter that a German writing from, I believe he was in Indiana, wrote back to his friends back in Germany. And I think it was 1816 or 18. It was not long after the War of 1812. And he lists the reasons why he came here and how wonderful America was. He's very, very complimentary about, you know, how easy life was here. But the three reasons they came, of course, were number one, in America, they could have their own land. In Europe, there was no possibility of owning their own land. So here they could come, they could stake out a homestead, they could actually, each man could have his own piece of land. And that was worth risking their life and losing all they had for. Secondly, they could have their own guns. In Europe, the Europeans never could have their own guns. They don't have them today. Only the crowned heads of Europe and their armies were able to have guns. And of course, much of that is still true in a lot of the world. If you go to places like Germany or England today, all the firearms are locked up in these government-controlled lockers or rooms. And if you want to go out and do some shooting or whatever, if you have to go and get permits and check them out and pay rental fees and all sorts of various things. And then, of course, you can go out and, I suppose, in a supervised way to a supervised place, can shoot. But down through history, most Europeans simply could not. So this letter I have says, you know, that not only can guns be bought, but everybody has them and they're all good shots. At least in his experience, they could hit, you know, squirrels at 200 yards or whatever. The third reason that they came to America was because they were free to worship the God of the Bible in the way that they understood the Bible. They didn't come here to worship Buddha or Allah or the trees or the gods of Hindu or the New Age gods today that are simply, you know, the gods of Hinduism and Shintoism brought here under a new package. They came to worship the God of the Bible. So we have lived in a land of liberty like none other in the history of the entire earth. So when we have economic problems like we have today, if we could get that in a perspective of 6,000 years of man's misery, for the most part, I think we would be very appreciative that things today are far, far better in our experience than the experience of most people who have ever lived. Needless to say, there are challenges. There are things that we wish were better. Not only are there are cancers, there are diseases, there are broken family situations, there are financial situations that obviously do cause us worry and harm. We should never forget that Jesus Christ said he was sent to heal the brokenhearted and to proclaim liberty to the captives. Now, most people he spoke to were captives. They were part of a Roman system where half of all people were owned by somebody else. And in fact, their nation was essentially a colony of the Roman Empire. And their individual freedoms were very limited. So Christ came to proclaim liberty, to proclaim freedom. And of course, that also means freedom of mind. And he says, the last part here, the recovery of sight to the blind to set at liberty those who are oppressed. So we can be oppressed by our own fixation with liberty, our own worry about what's going to happen to us next, what's going to happen to us next. Let's go over to Proverbs chapter 3, where God tells us that we should have trust. We should trust in the Lord. You know, our life here was not meant to be easy. It was meant to be challenges. If you look at the world that God made for us, we have challenges of weather. We have the need to, as Adam was told every single day, to, by the sweat of his brow, he would get enough to eat and would make his living. We've had it much easier in our experience, but, in much of history, they've had a difficult time feeding everyone. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths." Sometimes God wants us to get back to this basic mode of living, of learning to trust him with all of our heart and not to worry about the things we simply cannot change. It doesn't mean we don't need to be, planning and concerned about the future and that we shouldn't be, irresponsible in our behavior. But the things we simply cannot change, we must learn to leave in God's hands. And that is very difficult to do. "In all our ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct our paths." Verse 7, "Don't be wise in our own eyes, but fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh." And just knowing you are obeying God and that you can be free of a guilty conscience is health to your flesh and strength to your bones. But the key word here is trust. The first word in verse 5, trust on the Lord with all of our understanding. You know, if we get frustrated with things that happen, we can, sometimes become angry. I've got a book here called Anger, How to Recognize and Cope with It. But anger can eat on us just like worry. In fact, the two go hand in hand. There is a brotherhood between these two emotions. I want to read this section here. I think it says pretty good. Something very valuable for us. "Man is an extremely complex emotional organism, and the way in which he copes with his emotions is probably what separates him most widely from the rest of the animal kingdom. His greatest pleasures in life come from the realistic fulfillment of emotions and emotional drives." Now, probably the only animal or the only parallel to this might be dogs. They're sort of emotional animals, emotional things too, and they get a great thrill out of doing something that has emotional fulfillment, but not on a plane with people. Our greatest pleasures and rewards in life come as a result of our relationships, our family, and certainly with our God, and the rewards those give to us. If these emotions are mishandled, however, this could not only lead to unhappiness, but also may actually interfere with the normal health and functioning of his body. One of the emotions that can cause the greatest harm is anger. There are plenty of organic causes for illnesses, and no one should attempt to diagnose or treat himself. If you become ill, you should consult your physician. However, unrecognized anger can contribute to many physical disabilities. and its recognition may help alleviate a significant portion of the problem. I think we've all known people who had anger issues, unresolved anger issues, and many of them, especially our latest generation, come from being neglected by their parents, and that anger then has ways to act out. Anger can affect us adversely, both physically and mentally. If we think of it as a form of energy which is repressed, it must come out somewhere. We must recognize that it can harm almost any part of the body or influence our emotions and eventually our minds if a sufficient amount is accumulated. And of course, worrying and anger both tend to tense up not only our internal organs, but also our things like our heart. Our heart beats faster, and certainly we get a lot less out of each day. Let's ask, what are some things people worry about? Let's go first to Joshua chapter 7 and verse 4. I would say the first thing you can worry about is political turmoil. Now, there's plenty of that. As we see a completely new government coming to power in our country, I think there is plenty to worry about. We know where it's all going to end up, so why worry about it? I think the best thing to do is just simply to ignore it. I've been watching, or say I've been sort of less interested in the news since the 1st of November, because it's basically all just bad news. All the problems are bad. The solutions are going to make them worse. The only good news I've seen is the dropping price of oil. Was it yesterday, the price of barrel oil down to $33, which means gas should be $1.15, $1.20 a gallon at some point here pretty quick. That's the only good news I've seen that I can think of. I can't think of anything else that was good news on the networks or on the internet here in recent times. So that will help all of us. It will certainly help the work of the church as we spend a lot of money on gasoline, and perhaps it'll help a few things like all of us with our heating bills in the winter and our monthly costs. And our monthly gas bill, we try to get all of our gas at Costco on this credit card to get 5% back or whatever. And our cost this last month was less than half of what it was in August. So that helps us, but it also helps the church as a whole. It helps all of us individuals. Joshua chapter 7 and verse 4. About 3,000 men went up from the people, but they fled before the men of Ai. So these soldiers, we're kind of breaking into the story here, had gone up to Ai, but because of sin that was unresolved, God allowed the men of Ai to beat these people. So the men of Ai struck down about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate as far as Shebarim and struck them down on the descent. Therefore, the hearts of the people melted and became like water. Now, these people understood God's miraculous bringing them through the Red Sea, or their parents, and some of these as they were younger, through the Red Sea. They saw the waters of the Jordan part just a few days earlier than this, and they all walked across on dry land as the Levites and the priests stood in the middle. So God was with them. They thought, but all of a sudden they got defeated in battle. And so they became very worried and afraid. Verse 6, Joshua tore his clothes, fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until evening. He and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. I don't know if you ever got dirt or dust in your head, but it just kind of gritty and makes you feel sort of, yucky. You want to get your head washed off if you had that happen. But they did it all day long. And so they cried out to God, "Why have you allowed this to happen?" And of course the answer was they had disobeyed God and God's protection had left them. And of course we then went through all the tribes of Israel and the families, and they found Achan. And once his sin was removed, then God gave them encouragement. Now notice how these people, who up until this point should have been full of courage and confidence in the future, one event caused them to be, it says here, their hearts melted and they fled. So the same thing can happen to us if we are not obeying God and doing things in the right way. If we understand that our confidence is based on we are wholeheartedly trying to follow God and do what is right. Let's go over now to Numbers chapter 13 and verse 26. Just back a little bit. Numbers chapter 13 and verse 26. Where we have some other people that were simply worried, in this case for no reason. They had no reason to worry except what they observed with their eyes. This, of course, is the spies that were sent into Canaan. Now, what's troubling about this passage of Scripture is that God supernaturally protected these spies while they were in Canaan. He kept them from being recognized as the spies they were. He kept them. He protected them. So all the while God is protecting them, of the 12 men, 10 became chickens. Or at least scared like chickens. Numbers 13 and verse 26. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh, back about to the area where Petra is. And they brought back word to them and showed them all the fruit of the land, massive big clumps of grapes and all of these wonderful, wonderful fruits that that land produced. And they told them, they said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, cattle and goats and fruit trees and bees and all sorts of great things. And this is the fruit." But they said, and you know, God had protected them all this time. You know, just like God has brought us this far. You know, if God has brought us this far, is he about to abandon us? I don't think so. They said, "Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong." Now, they couldn't have been as strong as the Egyptians, but they said they were strong. "And the cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there." Now, warriors always focus on one thing that's going to make it worse than anything else. And I just want to say that I am a professional in this subject because I grew up with a mother who had honed worrying to a science, where she would sit up all night long in a rocking chair and smoking cigarettes and just, you know, worry, worry, worry all the time. I never did figure out what about, but my mom worried so much that she couldn't sleep many, many years when I was growing up. And I never did figure out what she worried about, but she just said she was so worried all the time she couldn't, you know, could hardly sleep. And so things went along just fine. I mean, comparatively speaking, there were obviously some challenges along the way, but you know, why not get a good night's sleep? A good night's sleep is sure better than sitting up worrying all night, it seems like to me. But when people are predisposed to worry and constantly be fretting about what might happen, that's just the way they are. It says, "The people are strong. We saw these descendants of Anak." You know, these really tall guys with big muscles and large shields and large swords. "And the Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and Jebusites and all these people. And Caleb cried to the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go at once. We are able to take this and possess it.' But the men who had gone up with him said, 'We are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we.' And they gave the children of Israel a bad report." So they had this negative worrying. And of course, worry is contagious. When one person gets it, it's like a virus. It spreads and more and more and more people get it. A good example of that, too, over in 2 Kings. Let's go over to 2 Kings chapter 13, where we have an entire army that is defeated because worry spreads through the army. It shows you how destructive gossip can be. And certainly we've all experienced what happens when, you know, gossip can spread through an organization or through a family, you know, that something terrible is going to happen. In 2 Kings chapter 7 and verse 1, Elisha said, "Hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord, tomorrow about this time, a seah of fine flour shall be sold for a shekel, and two seahs of barley for a shekel at the gate of Samaria." An officer, the armies have surrounded Jerusalem, or actually Samaria, and God says, or everybody was worried they were all going to die. They were all starving. They had no food left. It was very, very expensive. So an officer on whose hand the king leaned answered the man of God and said, "Look, if the Lord could make windows in heaven, could this thing be?" He said, "In fact, you shall see it with your eyes, but you shall not eat of it." Now there were four leprous men at the entrance of the gate, and they said to one another, "Why are we sitting here until we die? If we say we will enter the city, the famine is in the city, we shall die there. If we sit here, we shall also die." So these guys are leprous, they're already dying, but they are saying, "Well, we might as well go out and see how the Assyrians, they might give us some food to eat. So let us surrender to the Syrians. If they keep us alive, we shall live. If they kill us, we're only going to die, and we're already going to die anyway." They rose at twilight to go to the camp of the Syrians. When they had come to the outskirts of the Syrian camp, to their surprise, no one was there. For the Lord had caused the army of the Syrians to hear the noise of chariots and the noise of horses and the noise of a great army. So they didn't see anything. They simply heard this noise that sounded like a great army approaching. And they said to one another, "Look, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to attack us." Therefore they arose and fled at twilight and left the camp intact, tents, horses, and donkeys, and they fled for their lives. So we have an entire army that this worry is contagious, flees through the army, and before long they are all taking off. Now Jesus Christ knew that, you know, the end of the world, or the events towards the end of this age, would cause a lot of people to worry. In fact, worry so much that some would miss out on their invitation to God's kingdom. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24, beginning in verse 4. He simply says, during all of these times of wars, of rumors of wars, of terrible things happening, he says, see that you aren't troubled. So when all this takes place, don't start to worry. Now, that's easier said than done. But the comforting thing is, Jesus Christ never told us to do anything that he wouldn't offer us the help to be able to do. In Matthew chapter 24, this marvelous prophecy that's called the Olivet Prophecy, because it's given on the Mount of Olives, he says in verse 4, take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and they will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. Now, we have heard of those. We've heard lots of wars. We've heard of rumors of wars. More and more are going to be on the horizon. See that you are not troubled. So don't worry about the wars. The potential powder keg that we are facing now, of course, is Iran. And what are the Israelis going to do about the nuclear weapons that are being built in Iran? The fact that Russia is building them makes it far more difficult, because if we attack and blow them up, then we're attacking Russians, and probably Mr. Putin wouldn't like that. But the Israelis are not going to stand around and see another Holocaust. So we could wake up any morning and find there has been a nuclear exchange between the Israelis and the Iranians, and I would simply assume that the Iranians will get the worst of it. But that doesn't mean that all the rest of the Muslim world will not help them in their conquest. What reports I've read so far, it looks like Iran is coordinating attacks that will all come simultaneously from Hamas in the Gaza Strip, from Hezbollah in Lebanon and Syria, who now have been given a bunch of MiG-29s, some of the better Russian airplanes, and probably piloted by Russian pilots, just like they were back in the 1974 war, and also the war after that in the early 80s. So we have potential here for some real serious wars and rumors of wars that are going to be coming to pass. It says, but the end is not yet. But the important thing is, see that we are not troubled. God promises us protection. He promises to be with us. He promises things are going to be difficult. But it's going to be a challenge not to worry about it. I think a lot of people were worried for at least a short time when after September 11th attacks. And because, you know, what really causes worry is guilt. What really causes worry is guilt. I've done something wrong. It's my fault. Or I'm going to get found out. Or, you know, all this is my fault. And we've all done things. We've all paid stupid tax. We've all would have been better off if we had a crystal ball. But I keep plugging my crystal ball in, but it still is blank. It does not show the future. And when I get great advice about what to do with plan for the future, it always turns out to be bad advice, or it seems to be bad advice. So we've all done that, been there. So don't worry about it. God says he'll be with us. Don't be troubled. Also, don't be risky. But, you know, be prepared to be living a fairly simple life in the next few years, because all of these events are far beyond our control. All we can control is our own life and what will happen to us. Keep in mind that the 20th century, which is over now by 8 years, saw more carnage and killing than all human history combined before it. And this man's violence filling the earth is prophesied simply to continue. Now let's go over to Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4. Before the in the morning during our weekend that we are going to host, February 14th, which is also Valentine's Day, where it's not going to be a Valentine's Day weekend. This happens to be the weekend that's a long one, President's Day weekend. On that morning, I'm going to give a seminar on the life of Daniel, the chronology of Daniel, all the years he lived, and the various empires and how he served in those. So it'll be in this room at 10 o'clock in the morning. All of our teenagers and young adults, of course, are invited, but certainly any of the adults in the church that want to come are more than welcome to also. And I'll try to do a PowerPoint presentation and have some handouts. Daniel's life is fascinating because he lived so long and served in these various Gentile kingdoms and was trusted by the king. It's just an incredible story and never duplicated in history. Daniel chapter 4 and verse 9, it says, Belteshazzar, chief of the musicians, this is the name that he was given, it wasn't really his name, because I know the spirit of the holy God is in you, and no secret troubles you. Notice that. Daniel was, the king knew nothing bothered him, nothing worried him. Wouldn't it be great if God looked at you and said, well, I know that nothing worries you. You have enough faith in me that nothing's going to upset you. Explain to me the visions of my dream that I have seen and its interpretation. These were the visions of my head. In other words, what he saw or what he had in vision. While I was on my bed, I was looking, behold, a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong. Its height reached the heavens. And of course, as you know, this is the story of this great tree that symbolized Nebuchadnezzar himself. And of course, it's going to be cut down. Verse 14, he cried aloud and said, chop down the tree and cut off its branches, strip its leaves and scatter its fruit, lest the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump and roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and bronze. So here we have this prophecy about what's going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar himself, that he would lose his mind and go crazy. He would actually lose the spirit of man for 7 years. Verse 16, give him the heart of a beast and let seven times pass over him. And I realize that down through history, a lot of women have married men they thought were like this, that had the heart of a beast, but that's for another time. I think that in God's church today, we've got some mighty good husbands and some great families. But in our society we live in, there are people who seem to be bereft of normal human feeling. And some people might have identified with this. But Nebuchadnezzar, apparently, historically speaking, simply wandered as an animal living out in the woods for 7 years. And finally, of course, after the 7 years were over, then God restored him to his former kingdom. Down in verse 24, this is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree most high, which has come upon my lord the king. They shall drive you from men, your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. I can imagine a person doing this, you know, grabbing handfuls of grass and eating it. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and 7 years shall pass over you, till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. So God must have gradually brought back his understanding of being a person and his human spirit, that he understands some of those things. Inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. So this came upon Nebuchadnezzar, just like Daniel said. But Daniel didn't seem to worry about telling the king the truth, and the king apparently didn't worry too much about having this prophecy told about him. So one of those things is, it's just interesting to contemplate that there's nothing here about the king was troubled, or he was upset, or he said of Daniel, Daniel was troubled. None of this. It's just a matter of fact, this is going to happen, and they had enough faith in God to let it. Now, the second thing that can cause worry is impending personal disaster. I think we can all identify with this. Let's go to Matthew chapter 8. Impending personal disaster. And we've probably all, if been in what we thought was going to be a car accident and didn't happen, or perhaps, we're in some. I've related to you the story of my almost drowning in the Zambezi River a couple of years ago. I wasn't worried. I thought, well, this is it. I'm over, I'm going to drown in this silly river and get eaten by crocodiles. But God didn't see fit then. He knew I wasn't ready for the kingdom, so he brought me back up to the top of the last minute. But we have impending personal disaster, knowing that you're going to have your house repossessed, your job's going to be gone, whatever it might be, that cause people to worry. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 23 is a good example. Matthew 8 and verse 23. Now, when he got into a boat, the disciples followed him, and suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. So Jesus Christ is asleep in the bottom of the boat, and these guys are on this terrible storm. It's rain, it's wind, it's just about to blow the boat over and fill it up. The disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. Notice he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Now, why did he say that? Because they should have said, if we perish, we're going to be in God's kingdom. They should have had enough faith to say, well, Christ is here with us. He's in the boat. He knows what's happening. Even though he's asleep, he knows what's happening. And if he does allow us to die, we have followed his call. We have given ourselves into his hand. And we know that our life is safe with him for the future, no matter what. So he said, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? So what's the one worst thing that could possibly happen to you? Well, losing your relationship with Jesus Christ. That's it. Nothing else really could. There's nothing else in that category. As long as we have Him with us and we have that relationship with Him that we covenanted with and promised to, then we should not fear for the future in a macro sense. We don't fear about the future because He will be with us always. Why are you fearful, O you of little faith? He arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was great calm. And we certainly have seen many people receive God's not only miraculous healing, but miraculous deliverance out of conditions that they thought there was no way out of. There are many people who have made the wrong decision based on worry and fear. Abraham made a bad decision going into Egypt. He was worried about his wife. They'll think she's beautiful, they'll take her. So he basically was dishonest and said, she is my sister, even though she was his sister, but that wasn't her main relationship with him. And others sometimes, Peter was afraid, and so he denied Christ. He said, no, I don't know the man, three times on the night that Jesus Christ was betrayed. We can also sometimes make the wrong decision in a split second or in a time of worry. Now, worry today is called stress. And stress is used by the doctors as a panacea cause for everything else they can't figure out. But it's interesting how many drugs today are prescribed because of stress. In fact, if you look at the most commonly prescribed drugs, at this point, there are 2.4 billion drugs prescribed every year in this country. Imagine that, 2.4 billion prescriptions written every year. 118 million, at least in the recent year 2005, were for antidepressants. High blood pressure drugs were the next most common with 113 million. The use of antidepressants and other psychotropic drugs that affect the brain chemistry has skyrocketed over the last decade. In fact, psychiatrists today, about 90% of what they do is prescribe drugs. They used to sit and talk and try to have you talk about your childhood when you stubbed your toe, your kindergarten teacher was mean to you, whatever. Now they just say, how do you feel? What are the symptoms? They start giving you drugs. And so psychiatrists have become massive prescribers of psychotropic drugs. Between 1995 and 2007, 7 years, the use of these type of drugs increased almost 50%. Depression is a major public health issue, said Dr. Kelly Posner, an assistant professor at Columbia University. The fact that people are getting treatments they need now is encouraging because they think that's a good thing. I looked at just the word anxiety drugs. There are currently 23 different drugs that are prescribed for anxiety or worry. Ativan, Buspar, Celexa, Cymbalta, Dalmine, Desirel, Exofer, Evalil, Clonopin, Lexapro, Librium, Norpromin, Pamel. How do they come up with these names? It's like they get spaghetti or alphabet soup and just dump it out in the first seven words or letters that come out. Paxil, Prozac, which is one of the most common. Remerin, Cerax, Tofranil, Tranzini, Valium, which used to be the most common drug prescribed in the country. I think it's been overcome now by Prozac. Bistril, Xanax, and Zoloft. Those are all anxiety drugs. And here's what they are. Here are the symptoms of worry, or they can also call it depression or anxiety, that they are prescribed for. So these are the symptoms that these drugs are used for. Persistent, sad, anxious, or empty mood. Feelings of hopelessness or pessimism. Feelings of guilt, worthlessness, and helplessness. Loss of interest or pleasure in hobbies and activities that were once enjoyed. Decreased energy, fatigue, or being slowed down. I think that's because you reach 50 and get older than that. Difficulty concentrating, remembering, making decisions. Insomnia, early morning awakening, or oversleeping. Appetite and or weight loss or overeating and weight gain. So whichever end of the spectrum you're at, you can get some drugs for it. Thoughts of death or suicide attempts. Restlessness, irritability, persistent physical symptoms that do not respond to treatment, such as headaches, digestive disorders, and chronic pain. I think the the class of people that has the least depression are those that own golden retrievers. Isn't that right? They take all people in the country, and those that own golden retrievers have the least depression. So all I can say is if you own Chesapeakes, you may have frustration or some anger, but certainly they, dogs are a real good source of being an antidepressant, because they never get depressed. They're happy with you even if you come home late. They're still happy to see you. Did you ever notice that? You come home hours late, and the dog's still happy to see you. So that's great. So people sometimes, this worry and fear has become a national chronic problem that millions and millions of drugs are prescribed for. It's also called stress. Let's go over to Psalm chapter 4 and verse 5. What should be our approach, seeing we live in a society that has made a profession out of being full of worry and stress? Despite the fact we have the most physical and abundant blessings of any nation in the history of the earth, apparently we have a lot of worry. It's amazing how simple societies often are not afflicted by stress. When I was at college, there was a very, very large Frenchman named Jean-Claude, what was his name, Keeley or something, but he had spent most of his life helping the pygmies of Africa, who live in these little tiny huts out in North South Africa and Botswana and places. And they have very little contact with the outside world. And he was about three times the size of the average pygmy, but he did a film presentation. And he said he was out there working with the pygmies in their simple life, where they, you know, hunted and caught animals and grew some crops and lived very simply. And an airplane flew over, and a little native guy pointed and said, "What's that? What's that?" And he said, "Well, that's an airplane. It's a bird, metal bird, but it's not a bird. It's a machine that people can fly in." And the man said, "What's that for?" And he said, "Well, that takes you from one place to another." And the pygmy looked at him and said, "Well, if you're happy where you are, why would you want to do that?" So, you know, the story was, you know, they are very happy where they are doing what they are doing. And they don't have modern-day advertising. You know what the purpose of advertising is? Is to make you unhappy with what you have and make you want what they are offering you. So you have a car. It drives nice. It's comfortable. It gets you from here to there. But they're offering you this new fancy car that goes boom, boom, and it's got all these colors and all these, you know, things that make you look cool. And so Americans do the American thing. We go down and trade in our cars and go way in debt to buy some big fancy car because it was advertised. So we need to be very careful that we are not letting the society drag us into this vortex that causes stress and worry. In Psalm chapter 4 and verse 5, it says, "Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord." Really, this follows verse 4, which is a beautiful verse. "Be angry and don't sin." So don't let your emotions get out of control. "Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still." So take time to contemplate the many, many blessings that we have. The truth, the hope for the future, the family, the great blessing of being able to keep God's feast days, go to the feast every year, keep the Passover, and picture what a wonderful time the future has for all of us. So meditate within your heart on your bed. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. If we put our trust in physical things, we're going to be frustrated. There are many who say, "Who will show us any good? Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. You have put gladness in my heart more than the season that their grain and wine increased." So the psalmist is comparing his life with those that have great wealth. David's probably out on some sort of hillside with these little sheep. He said, "The gladness that God has put in my heart is more than those who are harvesting lots of grain and lots of wine and feel they have all of these physical blessings." So the gladness that God gives us with our husbands, our wives, our families, our extended church family, is worth more than all the grain and the wine in the land. "I will both lie down in peace and sleep." You know, sleep is a blessing. Being able to sleep and sleep really good. So notice how refreshed you feel after sleeping for 6 or 8 hours, really, really solid. Get down to that deep REM sleep where you're sort of in a canyon and you almost can't get woken up out of, but wake up in the morning refreshed. "For you alone, Lord, make me dwell in safety." The only place that we can dwell in safety is with God. Our Lord, our Savior that we know is going to give us all of those things. Let's go over now to Matthew chapter 6 and verse 25. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 25. While we're turning there, I'm going to go through one more cause of anxiety or worry that all of us can probably avoid. Now, I hesitate to delve into this kind of information because I am not an expert. I can only quote people who are experts and what they are saying, and there may be those who have opinions that are somewhat different. But in studying or doing some research on stress and anxiety and worry, I ran across this Blaylock Wellness Report, and he at least believes, this fellow that writes this report, that there are certain things that we can eat or we can avoid because they cause anxiety. He says, this is by the way, the April 2007 Blaylock Wellness Report. This Blaylock is a neurosurgeon doctor. He says, more reasons to avoid excitotoxin food additives. As many of you know, in 1995, I wrote a book on the subject of excitotoxin food additives. Excitotoxins, the taste that kills, such as MSG and aspartame. Since I wrote that book, an explosion of scientific studies has confirmed the validity of my warning. In fact, new studies have shown that there are glutenate receptors scattered throughout the body in the pancreas, bones, ovaries, testes, lungs, immune cells, heart, intestine, stomach, retinas, and even the skin. Likewise, scientists have discovered that these receptors, when overstimulated by these excitotoxins, are responsible for a number of diseases such as gross obesity, muscle weakness, chronic fatigue, asthma, sudden cardiac death, glaucoma, high cholesterol levels. In fact, they found that even a single dose of MSG causes free radicals to accumulate in the arteries for years. Now, I didn't know what MSG was until we lived in Pasco, and my wife and I used to go out like once a week or once every 2 weeks for, you know, our date. When I was in college, they told all of us guys that after you're married, you know, still date your wife, so take her out somewhere. And we were, of course, poor as church mice, so in most cases we went to this little Mexican place. They had a big sign up, you know, vegetable oils only. And we could go through this kind of buffet thing, and for about $6 we'd get two fairly decent Mexican food meals. Now, of course, it's about $30, but back then it was cheaper. So one night we went out to this Oriental place. It was Chinese Gardens or something in Pasco. And my wife started eating, and the entire side of her face went numb, just like you'd turn off a switch. It just felt like she'd had Novocaine shot in there. And it turned out it was a reaction to MSG that they had put in the food. MSG is a monosodium glutamate or something like that, monosodium glutamate. Is certainly very common in Oriental foods. It says it's been shown that dietary glutamate and other excitotoxins can stimulate a number of cancers to grow faster, including breast, lung, prostate, ovarian, and brain cancers. It turns the cancers into very aggressive, invasive, and deadly malignancies. As frightening as all this is, there is even bigger disaster looming in our society. A significant number of studies have shown that dietary MSG and other food excitotoxins can cause destruction of specific brain parts. The new studies have shown that high glutamate levels are closely connected to depression, schizophrenia, and other psychological problems. In the case of depression, which is sort of another way of saying anxiety and worry, there is a direct relationship between level of brain glutamate and the severity of depression. With so many Americans eating such large quantities of foods containing excitotoxins, it's a wonder we are seeing many cases of depression and suicides in our society. But it gets worse. A new study of MSG found the diet dramatically increased the activation of the brain's immune system, which is actually very bad. It is known as we age, our brain's immune system, called microglia, becomes overactive, resulting in a low-grade inflammation of the brain. Alzheimer's and Parkinson's patients have even higher levels of brain immune inflammatory inflammation due to this overactive brain immunity, and the severity of these diseases is directly proportional to the intensity of this immune activity. Now comes the shocking news. A recent study in a prestigious journal found that when an infant animal was fed MSG, even for just a few doses, it increased the brain's immune activation dramatically and lasted until adulthood. This means that adults who eat MSG daily are dramatically increasing their brain inflammation, which causes things like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. And then he goes on to report about flu vaccines, that the tenfold increase in Alzheimer's disease in people over age 55 who have received the flu vaccine 5 years in a row. To avoid these disasters, you must look for MSG on the label, but it is hidden in names such as hydrolyzed protein, vegetable proteins, caseinate, whey protein concentrates, soy proteins, soy isolates or concentrates, broth, stock, quote, natural flavoring, which is on a lot of labels, spices, autolyzed enzymes, yeast extract, autolyzed yeast, and carrageenan. These are all simply other names for MSG. So I thought, well, I found that doing some research as a cause of stress, anxiety, and also depression. If there's one thing we don't need, it's one more reason to have those symptoms. So for the what it's worth department, it might be good to stay away from some of those things just to make sure that we're not adding to the problem. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 25, therefore I say to you, don't worry about your life or what you will eat or drink. So don't become overly anxious. It doesn't say don't plan or don't work. We are to plan. We are to work. We are to get the education we need. We should understand our responsibility to provide for our families and accomplish all that we can in this life as Christians. But he says don't worry about it or what you'll put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They don't sow, they don't reap, they don't gather into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are they not, of more value than you? Which of you worrying can add one cubit to his stature? Can we worry about something and cause our hair to grow back, cause our eyes to get better, cause ourselves to be 2 inches taller? The answer, of course, is no. But we can be concerned about our relationship with Jesus Christ and claim this next promise. Let's go to Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28. God promised, Jesus Christ told us, if we come to Him, He will give us peace. He will give us peace from anxiety, from worry, because we will understand that our relationship with Him and the coming kingdom of God trumps all other concerns, that there's nothing in this life that could take that away from us, except our own leaving God and disobeying Him instead of trying to stay within His family. In Matthew chapter 11, in verse 28, there's a very powerful promise, and one that each of us can on our knees claim and say, God, you promised this, you know, please grant it to me. He says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I will give you peace. Recall in the book of John, he said, my peace I leave with you, not as the world understands peace, but the peace that only I can give. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. You will find contentment, no matter what state you might find yourself in. He says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Truly, the world around us is almost sinking in a sea of worry, not knowing about the future, having no hope because of all they see around us. With us, we should be different than that. We should have confidence in the future. We should claim Jesus Christ's promise here that He will give us His rest and His peace.